WPG, Talk Radio 95.5.
A day or so of ugly weather aside, fishing is firing on almost all cylinders, and it will be in the next week or so. Things are just, it's just getting better and better as April progresses into May. Just a reminder, 17 days left in the April portion of the togging season. We'll be talking blackfish in the next two segments with a very special guest. Trout season continues and the hatchery trucks are rolling this coming week. Monday, April 14th, Lake Shenandoah, Ocean County will get hit with 420. The North Branch of Matitoconk 320, the South Branch of Matitoconk 500, and the Toms River 530. Remember, on those waters, you have to wait until 5 p.m. to fish. And also Prospertown Lake 537 there in Jackson is going to get 290. The trout conservation area, the Toms River, will not be stocked. On Tuesday the 16th, Greenwich Lake 360, Grenlock Lake 300, Harrisonville Lake 360, Iona Lake 330, and Oak Pond 330 right there behind the Southern Region office. Rowan's Pond 100, Shadowless Sandwash 310, Shark River 270. That is a sleeper right there up there in Neptune. It is a top end of the Rockfin area. It is a sleeper. And Swedesboro Lake 410. Wednesday the 17th, Birch Grove Park right behind here. First two ponds are going to get hit with 300. Crystal Lake 420, Gloucester City Pond 100, Hamilton Lake 440, Heritage Park Pond right there behind the municipal building. We call it the Absecon Pit. That's 330. Laurel Pond 200, Pemberton Lake 420, Southwest Branch of Rancocas Creek 180. First time hitting Sylvan Lake 330. And for Thursday the 18th, closing out the week, Cohansie River 100. Remember, there's just that one stocking point there. Mary Elmer Lake 400, the Morris River 330, Ponder Lodge 370, Shawsmill Pond 400, South Violent Park Pond 370, and Tuckahoe Lake 420. And don't forget, Grenlock Lake and South Violent Park Pond are part of the bonus broodstock program. Grenlock Lake was hit with 50 and South Violent Park Pond with 50. Three-year-old breeders, these fish are anywhere from 3.5 to 6-7 pounds. Some, I heard, are a little bigger. So get out there and enjoy. Grab that cup, grab that Rebel. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio. Talking Tog coming up. Also, update on the Turkey Project. Things are happening. And the Striped Bass Bonus Tag Program. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5 and the WPG Talk Radio app. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Well, trout season in full swing. Freshwater fishing's picking up. I have a, you know, day of bad weather, but just a reminder, only 17 days remaining from today, Saturday the 13th. The remainder of the spring portion of the segmented blackfish, a.k.a. tog season. Crunch time. Crunch time. Some big fish out there. I told a couple of guys. Won't mention his name. He knows who he is. Got turned around on a big, he's figuring a double-digit fish. Where was he? He was in the back, just inside Barnegat Inlet. The guy's been togging for a number of years. He knows his tog. He knows his stuff. He said, Tom P. said, I guess got wrapped around some. He was by, let's say, fuel dock, and I'll leave it at that. There's some big fish out there. I saw some keepers being caught. Now, the first couple of days, we had to wash out the rain, but the boats went out. Shout out to Captain Ronnie on the Captain Cal 2. They did well. So did several other boats. And we had a funky weather pattern. And let's see, man, with only 17 days left, the time is flying. So I put in a call right now to, I call him the Tog Meister Masterman. He calls himself the Pro Togger, good friend of Rack and Fin Radio for many years. Frank Mahalik, he is a pro staffer, a rod designer with Century Rods. He also sponsored by Tsunami, Vector Hooks, Northeast Outdoor Clothing, and a new sponsor, No Live Bait Needed. He is an ace when it comes to tog, especially at crunch time. Man does it all. He's going to grace us with some information. Frankie Mahalik, how you doing, little brother?
Doing great, Tom. How are you?
Listen, people, just as a reminder, Mahalik has been catching blackfish since when? What did he say? Since Moses was a baby. Frank, you've been doing it for a number of decades. Good for you, man. You've become an ace at it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you know what, Tom? It's like hitting a moving target, man. You got to learn from the best. And as tackle evolves and techniques evolve, you have to stay out of your comfort zone. And I'm very fortunate that I can fish with some of the very best captains and fishermen And I learn from them. They share with me, and they don't mind me sharing with everybody else.
And Frank, that's one of the refreshing things. I've known you for years now, is that you, and you always emphasize fishing, especially talk. It's an evolving, it's a learning process. Things are constantly changing. Nothing is consistent. I mean, you'll get a lack of a better term, a consistent bite here, there, time of year, but it's subject to change, like on a moment's notice. And you keep evolving with it, and that's puts you in the standing that you're in.
Yeah, well, you know what, Tom? The biggest change in the fishing industry, I would say probably ever, was the advent of braided line. When braided line came on board, it changed the whole game. It changed rods. It changed reels. Yep. It changed the way we fish dramatically.
I remember how tough, Frank, the first time I used it, we're fishing off Asbury Park. I was with the crew from Abu Garcia when they were still in Fairfield. And right off the convention center, casino, arena, whatever. And you could, they had some prototype, you know, lines there. I never realized what you can feel with, because I was a mono guy, you know, a mono kid, I should say. And that was just amazing. And you're right. It did change the game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I remember one day I went fishing with Tom Daffin about 10 years ago, and I went out and I was starting to evolve. I was using Abu Garcia reels, like I think an HS 7000 reel I was using, and I liked the Abu reels because I could service them myself. I was using braided line on this outfit, and I was using a rod that is no longer made. And we went out, and we're heading out this day, and it was 15 degrees. And we're going out.
Told you it was crazy.
But we get out there, we start fishing, okay? I catch like an 8-9 pound fish, no big deal. I drop in again, I get a bigger fish. My rod virtually blows up right at the stripper guide, okay?
Whoa!
Get my other rod, I'm using that. Next thing I know, my reels are not acting correctly. The dogs are not engaging because it was so cold. The lubricant was thick, and it was, you know, everything was acting funky. Needless to say, there were like 4 double digits caught on the boat that day. I didn't get any of them. I got like some 8-9 pounders, okay. But when I was on my way home, I called up a good friend of mine, Joe Zagorski, and we had a conversation about rods, reels, lines. Before I got home, I had 2 rods ordered. I had 2 reels ordered. I spent $2,000, and in a couple weeks, I had a whole new game plan when it comes to black fishing.
Well, Frank, let's get to the rods, the Pro Tog. You teamed with Ryan White from Century. What was the genesis of that?
Again, after this failure point and me trying to search for, and I'm an eternal tinkler. Tinkerer. I like things. I like things.
Mihalik, you kill me, man.
I like things as good as they can be, and I need the mechanical advantage, okay? I need to make sure everything I'm doing is to benefit me in getting this fish. And if anybody knows big blackfish, and I'm not talking, you know, don't take a picture of me with a 5 or 6 pound blackfish. I'm just not interested. I'm after the big fish. Mm-hmm. But when you get that big fish bite, what happens in the first 15, 20 seconds dictates whether you get that fish or not. The unique thing with the Pro Togger is the action of the blank. The tip is perfect for throwing a 10-ounce weight in a whole crab. It's super sensitive, and it has the action that you can feel the bite very easily. But the midsection and the butt of that rod has power, like it comes out of nowhere. So when you do get the bite and you pull up on the foregrip and you put the rod butt in front of your hip, you crank on that reel till the fish stops you. You're in an extremely powerful position with the rod tip up. The line is tight. The rod's corked over. Before that fish knows what happens, you have him 20 foot off the bottom with a locked up, set on murder drag. And you're just holding that fish there, and he can want to get in there all he wants. But chances of you getting that fish after that first 30 seconds goes up dramatically. And in the last 2 days, I know 2 guys that fished on Fishing Fever in the last 2 days.
Devin,
one of them got a 20-pounder, Brian Mignone, congrats to him on the Pro Talker. And Sully went out and got another, I think, a 13-pounder yesterday on the Pro Talker. And in having conversations with them, they've changed the way they fish by the way they set the hook and the way they fight the fish. because of the Pro Togger, and that's just a tremendous compliment.
Frank, the specs on a Pro Togger: length, weight, what?
It's 7'10" long. A completely assembled Frank Mihalik's Pro Togger, which is the name of the Century factory rod, completely built. The rod weighs 9.6 ounces.
Playing devil's advocate, Mihalik, you said yourself just a few minutes ago, you're a tinkerer. Do you see room for even more improvement on the performance of the Pro Togger? Maybe one a couple of inches shorter, maybe an inch or two longer, maybe a different spine, maybe a different pound to the graphite. What do you think?
Hey, you know what? We've done that, and we have other rod series that are extremely close to it, but they're a little lighter and a little shorter. Brian Mignone, for instance. Brian's been a togger a long time. Brian got his Pro Togger, and he preferred one a little bit shorter, so he had a few inches cut off his. But my point is this. Brian is a hardcore togger, and he knows what he wants, and he knows what he needs. You build that Pro Togger however you want, bro. My Pro Togger, Frank Mihalik's Pro Togger, the Century Factory Rock, is a giant upgrade for someone who really doesn't know what it takes to handle huge fish. If you're just a regular dude, you got one double digit, maybe two. Maybe you're the kind of guy that sets the hook and the fish gets you back into the wreck. If you put this tool in your hands, you're going to be 75% ahead of everybody else who's using their same old rods and reels.
Okay, joining us on the line is Frank Mihalik, designer of the Pro Togger series, Pro Togger rod model for Century Rods. Been with Century 5 years, also sponsored by Tsunami, Vector Hooks, Nor'easter Outdoor Clothing, and the new sponsor, No Live Bait Needed. Well, Frank, you're going to hang around for another segment. I want to start to talk, really, we had to jam it in there. Tactics. This time of year, water's getting warmer. Are the lips and gums sore being the whole thing? Is that a fallacy? Best baits, that type of thing. And jigs or rigs. You can hang in for another segment, correct?
Yep.
Okay, Frank, on the end, just to inform the listeners, retail tag on a Pro Togger.
$550.
Well, that's right in there, Mihalik. It's not outrageous. I saw some Fenwick rods. I can't believe over $1,000, close to $1,000.
Good rods aren't cheap. These rods aren't good.
And they're manufactured where?
The rod blanks are built in the UK, and the rods are assembled at Hatteras Jack's Tackle Shop in Rodan, North Carolina.
North Carolina. Okay, people, grab that cup, grab that Rebel. We'll be back with some crunch time tactics with Pro Togger Frank Mihalik. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5. Bullet Points.
I'm Eben Brown. Elected leaders in New York State, and even more so in New York City, aren't known for being overly gun-friendly. Even the U.S. Supreme Court overturning their gun control laws hasn't stopped them from passing new ones, and critics point to the heavy restrictions on legal gun ownership as to one of the reasons why New York seems to endure rising crime rates, as average citizens have little means to defend themselves. But now the city of New York wants to allow building inspectors to carry guns with them on the job because those city workers report being attacked on the job. According to emails obtained and published by the blog Gothamist, the city's buildings department wants building inspectors to be made peace officers so they can carry guns and make arrests. Their current policy is to report aggressive behavior from people encountered during inspections to their superiors. And those are your bullet points. I'm Eben Brown, Fox News.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5. South Jersey's talk station.
Here we go to the gap below. Back inside Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Week of April 13th and 14th. Joining us on the line is Frank Mihalik, Pro Togger number one, man, in my book, from what I'm seeing. And his reputation is just keeps building. Most important thing, as Frank states, you're always learning. You're always learning. Hey, Frank, did you ever notice that? Oh, no, I know what I'm doing. And people don't grow, and they say the fishing sucks, or this is bad, this is bad. What is that? And you've been around a lot of guys, different states, fishing up and down the coast. Frank, what is that mindset, that mind block that happens? Is it a certain age or what?
You know, everybody becomes comfortable, Tom. I'm really lucky, and I'm very privileged to work with people in these companies. That the companies that I work with don't just make stuff and like give me stuff for free. I don't need free stuff, bro. I have a good job. I enjoy working with companies who take my input, make adjustments, and make changes to make quality gear better for better prices. That's what I'm all about. I just want to be involved, and I want to improve these things so we can catch more fish.
That's it, bottom line. Okay, Mihalik, let's get to it. This time of year, now we have 17 days of, in effect, 2 weeks, a little more. Where are we searching for tog? Water temperature critical, tide pool critical, and the top baits and jig or rig predicated on depth. What do you got, Frank? Go ahead.
Water temperature, you can't really do anything about it, so don't fight it. Just go fishing. If you're fishing in the reefs, at the reef sites in, say, less than 70, 80 foot of water, fishing a jig is a great idea. Taking a jig and putting on a piece of clam and then putting on a half a green crab, excellent way to get this.
Mahalik, you got it. All right, Frank, go ahead.
I'll come in and I'll start chewing on the clam because it's nice. It smells real good. And then they realize the crab is in there and they just keep on chewing. But, okay, now here's kind of my thing. You said there's 17 days left in the blackfish season in April. I have 7 charters in those 17 days. If the weather permits, we're going to be fishing out a little bit. We're mostly hunting bigger fish. We're probably going to be fishing outside of like 75, 80 feet.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, I'm probably going to be fishing a rig. I'm going to be fishing a V rig or a snafu with a nice, 3 or 4 inch across white crab with a couple hooks in it. I drop it on the ground. I step on it a couple times. I put it in and I just let her soak. And I'm not really interested in the little tiny taps. I'm going to wait that bite out until I get a really big womp, womp, womp. Or I'm going to wait till the fish literally picks up the bait and swims off with it, and I feel the sinker dragging across the bottom.
Okay, you can feel that. Yeah, Frank, I've seen that. I've felt that a few times, too. So, and it's a matter of timing on the hook set, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of times when blackfish come over, they'll give you it's called a scratch bite. It's a small tap. It's a tap, 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 tap. Sometimes.
And what are they doing? They're just like nibbling on it? What's the dealio?
Yeah, they're just coming over and giving it a little taste. Sometimes they're just seeing if it's something that they want to eat. A lot of times these fish, for whatever reason, they'll come over and they'll give it a little tap. And I'll sometimes feel the fish like laying against my top shot where I'll just feel a little, and I'll just be holding the rod in my hand, but I can feel this unique little pull, almost like the tide is running against your line. And I'll just stay there and be very patient because a lot of times the big fish will be attracted to small fish eating the bait. The big dominant male will go over, push the little fish off the bait, and he'll either turn around and he'll eat it, or he'll stop and he'll rest his chin or his belly on top of the bait to protect it from the other fish eating it. All of a sudden, a minute later, you hook this fish. It's no wonder we have so many foul-hooked blackfish. With the way they eat, it's a little bit peculiar.
I never knew they'll actually lay on the bait, Frank.
Yeah, I've had Tom, how many fish have you caught that are foul hooked under the chin or foul hooked in the belly?
The few fish I catch, more than a few, because my timing sucks.
it can't be a coincidence. And part of fishing that large bait is you have a big bait with a couple hooks in it. And again, we're talking about fishing for bigger fish. You give it time. You let it soak. You always have enough bait for that fish to turn around and finish it off. Even if a couple little guys were pecking away at it, there's always enough left on those hooks to have them come back and finish it. I'll put a new bait down there. I'll fish it for maybe 15 minutes. If I haven't gotten a bite, I'm going to pull up, put a new bait on, and repeat the process over and over and over again.
So, Frank, premium bait, in your opinion, white lager with a fresh clam or salted clam, does it make a difference?
Either way, that'll be fine. Green crabs are okay.
Yeah.
Clam is good, especially in the spring. Believe it or not, cooked shrimp is tasty. Blackfish find it very tasty.
Yes.
Not a bad idea to put it on the hook and put a little piece of crab behind it, because the soft bait, they'll come up and they'll peck at it and they'll peck at it and it's kind of gone. But the soft bait with a piece of crab gives them something to chew on. If I'm outside of 10 miles, if I'm in more than 80 foot of water, I'm really going to focus on white crabs simply because they're natural bait out there. Green crab, you don't normally see green crabs that far offshore. So, you know, especially if you're fishing 20, 30 miles offshore, that's definitely time for white ligers. I'm sure there's going to be people that know a lot more than me, and that's okay. They can do whatever they want. I'm just saying what I do.
Frank, question now. Waiting out a tug, like this friend of mine that had the hookup, went into the structure, whatever. Have you ever had occasion where you know you have the fish hooked, you know he's a big-ass fish, and he gets back in that hole? Have you ever had to wait out a fish and eventually landed it, you know, brought it and decked it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that will happen sometimes. If you're fishing where you're casting away from the boat and your angle is not absolutely straight up and down, there's absolutely a chance that that could happen. And it's good to just, you know, be patient. If he does get in there, be patient, let him wait, let him sit on a slack line. Don't put any pressure. Let it wait 20 or 30 seconds or maybe a couple minutes. And then reel up tight on the fish and swing and try to get him out of that hole. A lot of times if the fish is in a hole, it depends on which way the line is going. If the line is directing out of the hole and you pull him at the right time, or maybe his head is close to the edge, you might be able to get him back out of there. The thing with big fish, you're not going to bully a big fish. That big fish, and by big fish, I'm talking about something like over 15 pounds. You win and lose that battle in the first 30 seconds. And if you can...
Bingo. Exactly, man.
If you get that rod tip up, get that rod butt in front of your hips so you're locked in a very powerful position, get on that reel and crank until he stops you. Lock down drag. You got that fish there. Everybody on the boat's going to know you got a big fish on. Mm-hmm. And you're basically holding that fish there until he gives it a chance, and maybe he does a circle and all of a sudden the rod tip starts to come up and you get a few more cranks on him. But that is mission critical if you want to catch really large blackfish. Hey, Tom, how many times have you been out on a headboat? And you know this one guy, and he's always in the same spot, and every day he gets a bite and he sets the hook and the rod's up in the air, okay? But now he has the reel. So now he lowers the rod tip and he puts his hand on the reel. Well, when you set the hook and your rod tip's up in the air, okay, you're good so far. But now you lower the rod tip and you let the fish swim down. He goes in a hole.
There you go.
And he goes, oh, he got me again. It's like, bro, what did you think was going to happen? You just let him swim into the hole.
Frank, as the season progresses now, again, 17 more days, whatever we have. Now, I've seen, you're basically using rigs. Do jigs in the deeper water have any play in the game? For example, shout out to Captain Pete Meyer, Runoff Lures. He has some tog jigs that are shrimp style, shrimp shape, that are 4, 5, 6 ounces. Is that really in the game right now?
If I'm fishing a jig, I really don't want to fish more than 2 ounces. And, you know, and shout out to my buddy Brian. We had a conversation yesterday. You know, Brian landed his first 20 pounds. Congratulations again. And Brian is excellent on the jig. Brian was actually fishing a jig out there. He had a bite, fish broke him off, dropped down another jig, had another bite, broke him off, picked up his pro togger with a snafu on it, dropped it in. He's in the 20-pound club.
Bada bing, bada boom, right there.
There you go. There's a time and a place. And I have some awesome jig rods. But you really, you know, if you take a knife to a gunfight, bro, after they shoot you a couple times, come on, man. And again, you got to play it by ear. You know, if you're in 60, 70, 80 foot of water, it's a different game. When you're out over 100 and you're hunting trophies and you're on a big high piece, a high relief piece of bottom structure, you know, if you're fishing some natural coral bottom or something that the fish really is not going to get too wrapped up in, go ahead and fish the jig. If you're fishing something that sticks 10, 20 feet up off the bottom that the fish can get back down in there on that lighter gear and get you wrapped up, I don't want to spend all that money and spend my whole day to get that one bite to lose the fish. It's, you know.
Point well taken. We're speaking with Frank Mihalik. He is the designer of the Century Rod Pro Togger, arguably the best hog rod out there. He's been with Century 5 years, worked with Ryan White. He's also sponsored by Tsunami, Vector Hooks, Nariser Outdoor Clothing, and new sponsor, No Live Bait Needed. Well, Frank, now the 17 days after, you got 7 charters. What are you, you're missing a few days here? Because I figured you would have 16 out of 17, one day of rest.
I do have to work. I do have to work. But, you know, I mean, so far I've had 6 charters canceled so far in April.
Yeah, well,
so
yeah.
You know, it just so happens the days I have charters, it's been nasty. But that's how April is.
Frank, question. We have to close this out. Your thought on tog conservation, a big fish like that, 75, 100, 110 feet of water, letting it go. Will it survive? And also, Frank, you always hear about, oh, a fish that big is 155 years old or something like that. You know what I mean? All your years talking, what have you found out?
Well, we've actually done tests on the Olus, with the ear bones on these big fish. And these Sully, for instance, he caught a 25.8-pound blackfish on Fishing Fever. The Olus on that fish came back. The fish was 26 years old. Okay, so off of South Jersey, those fish are growing at a rate of about 1 pound per year. No nonsense, no opinions. That's the fact, okay? So the fish do grow a lot. They do grow slower up north off of Massachusetts, Rhode Island,
right,
at about like 30 to 40% slower. So, you know, you can't say the fish is 100 years old. That's just silly. You bring a fish up from 100 foot of water, if he comes up and his gills are ruptured, you know, if he's bleeding out of his gill, if his intestines are popped out and they're hanging out and they're shredded, he's not going to live. If he has a little bit of the bends and his air bladder's popping out a little bit, let him sit in a bucket of water. Let him try to acclimate. Try to get him back in there as quick as he can, and chances are he'll live.
Good.
But if he's bleeding a little bit, if he's bleeding on deck, when he goes back down to the increased pressure in 100 foot of water, he's going to bleed out. So if he's bleeding, keep him. Personally, my guys on my charters, what me and my crew do, this time of year, we're letting all the females go.
Mm-hmm.
We'll keep the male fish if they're up to like 7 pounds. If they're over 7 pounds, we're going to let them go. And not to say, you know what? And I'm a firm believer in, if you catch a fish, bro, you can do whatever you want with it. It's your fish. That's just something that me and my crew are trying to do to help save the fishery. We're not any better than anybody else. We just like catching them. And, you know, the big ones don't really eat so good. But if we get that 15, 20 pounder and he's bleeding out of his gills, I'm not going to let him go just for the sake of trying to pat myself on the back and say, oh, thanks for the release. It's like, bro, don't thank me for releasing my fish. It's my fish. It's not yours. So
fair enough, Frank. Thanks for joining us on Rockfin. You have a great remainder of the season. Hope to see you sometime this spring, Mr. M.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate you.
Take care. See it.
Get him, bud. Get him.
Frank Mihalik, great guy. Just a great guy. Okay, grab that cup, grab that Red Bull. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
Mark Levin.
The greatest danger to you, my fellow Americans, is Joe Biden. He's destroying our economy. He's destroying our supply chain. He's destroying our energy system. He's destroying small business. He wants to tax you into oblivion. He wants your money. The only reason they want to raise taxes is so they can control you. So they can control what you earn.
Mark Levin on South Jersey's talk station, WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Fox News, I'm Chris DeMeo. Former President Trump is expected to take the stand in his New York hush money trial.
I'm testifying. I tell the truth. I mean, all I can do is tell the truth. And the truth is that there's no case. They have no case.
The former president calling this trial a scam and a witch hunt. Vice President Harris in Arizona blaming former President Trump for the state's ruling on abortion. She says a second Trump term would entail
more bans, more suffering, and less freedom. Just like he did in Arizona, he basically wants to take America back to the 1800s.
Now, the law bans abortions past 15 weeks and makes no exceptions but for the life of the mother. Former President Trump says abortion rights belong with the states, but says the Arizona court decision went too far. America's listening to Fox News.
Your WPG Talk Radio 95.5 AccuWeather forecast for South Jersey. For today, windy with episodes of sunshine with a high of 63. For tonight, breezy this evening, otherwise clear with a low of 44. For tomorrow, breezy and warmer with sun followed by increasing clouds with a high of 74. For tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a thunderstorm in spots, low 58. I'm AccuWeather's Caitlin Lawrence on WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
This is South Jersey's talk station, WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Yeah, back inside Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Weekend of April 13th and 14th. 1 week to go until the spring gobbler season opens. Okay, you turkey hunting day is going to be the April 20th. Okay, period A is going to be April 22nd to the 26th. Period B, 29th to May 3rd. Period C, May 6th to 10th. Period D, May 13th to 17th, and May 20th to 24th. And that last hunting hour is going to be half hour before sunrise to sunset. Otherwise, it's half hour before sunrise to noon. As I mentioned, I've been traveling around, especially the past month and a half or so, seeing that the flocks are breaking up now. And they're, I've been primarily in the central and south. North, very lean. Up there the other day, up there, trout fishing, did some scoping in some turkey areas. Didn't see a bird. Joining us on the line right now is Jimmy Sloan. He's with DEP's Fish and Wildlife. He is a senior biologist and the Upland Game Bird Project leader, and he's also involved in some badass cool turkey research. Jimmy, thanks for joining us on the line right now. How you doing, little brother? The season is almost upon us.
Yes, it is, Tommy. Thanks for having me.
Always, Jimmy. Dude, let's get to last year's harvest. You had the zones in the south, a couple in the central, mostly in the south, are just kicking ass. The north seems to be getting leaner and leaner. What's the dealio?
Yeah, so last year our spring harvest was 2,545 birds. That's up about 230 birds from 2022. You know, interesting fact is we killed right around 2,100 adults and about, 450 juveniles. So, mm-hmm. You know, our harvest is the 80-20 split from adults to juveniles, which is pretty interesting. North Jersey is hurting. They're struggling with turkeys. Maybe a little bit later we can get into the research side of things. I can let you know how North Jersey's faring so far in the research.
Well, Jim, what's scary to me is getting press releases from all over the Midwestern states, especially now some in the Southeast. They're either reducing the number of birds, reducing the length of the season, or in some states, getting rid of the fall season altogether. So this is this seems to be a pervasive problem. And there's no rhyme or reason. They're going crazy with the research, and you're involved in a super cool project. But I don't know, Jim. It's sort of scary because turkeys were one of the greatest success stories while modern wildlife management.
Yeah, and there's still going to be. I mean, there's so much research going on, and this is a range-wide problem where we're seeing harvest decline. And some of these states, I mean, their regulations were so outlandish. I mean, five birds.
Yeah, right. That's just true, yeah.
Super early seasons when you're messing with those hens, when they're incubating eggs. I mean, that doesn't help a population. Dead hens cannot lay eggs, plain and simple.
Jim, what was the top couple of turkey hunting areas for last year, for the spring?
So, I mean, turkey hunting area 20 and 21, they still carry the crown. I mean, every year for the last 10 years, they produce the most harvest.
You're talking Gloucester, Salem, and Cumberland counties primarily, correct?
Yeah, yep. And also, I mean, turkey hunting area 14, oof. Vineland.
That's Bordentown, right across the state, at Burlington and Ocean. That's a monster, too.
It is. It's a large turkey hunting area. That's probably why the harvest is so high. But, man, it is fun chasing a bird in the Pine Barrens.
Yeah, reminds me of hunting down there by Ocala and Volusia in Florida. That scrub pine, oak, pitch pine, that whole area. That's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah, it's interesting. And, I mean, last year's harvest, we only had three turkey hunting areas that saw a decrease in harvest, and they were all less than 10 turkey hunting areas.
There you
two,
go.
Four, seven. They had a decrease.
Jim, so how's the poult production been the past couple of years, and poults per hen, what's the deal?
So in 2022, so it's important to remember your poults per hen, especially in a spring season, male only. It's important 2 years prior to that season what the poults per hen was. So in 2022, we had 3.48 which is pretty good.
Pretty good, yeah, right.
2021, we had 3.71, which is why we had the increase in harvest last year. So 2 years, the Jake's become Tom's. You know, that makes up 80% of our harvest. So this year, this past year, we were 3.24. So that makes my projections for the 2026 season, 2025 season will be less than this year. But this year, we should be looking within good. 40 birds, I'd say.
Looking good, looking good. Well, Jim, the again, this always pops up, the reasons for lack of poults or not a great nesting success, predation, weather, loss of habitat, predation keeps coming up. The nest raiders. I mean, is that the overlying factor there, or is weather come into it as well?
What, it's weather and predators. Weather and predators. I mean, hens sitting on that nest are very vulnerable to predation. And when they leave that nest for a short period of time, that nest is going to get raided. But the weather is huge. The weather is huge. We get 3 days of straight rain right when the poults just hatch, and they're smoked. I mean, so weather is super important.
Yeah, I remember that sometime. It was around 2003, 4, or 5, somewhere in there. We had about a week and a half, 2 weeks of straight rain. I remember that. I was living down Ocean City. Actually, no, I was in Rio Grande in Summers Point area. It was horrible. And the next year, bore that out.
Yeah. I mean, just the last 2 weeks, look at how much rain we got. But luckily, we only had, in the research hens, we only had two birds incubating. But both of those nests failed. They were failed nesting attempts. And it's directly because we got that much rain. I mean, the hens are still alive. We just got that much rain that they gave up on that nest, but they will re-nest it.
Okay, Jonas on the line is Jimmy Sloan. He is the DEP's Fish and Wildlife's Upland Game Bird Project Leader, and this includes turkey season coming up. Jim, before we get to real quick, because we're up against a hard breaker on the hen research you're doing, I always get asked this, you know, what with this lottery season and this and this, and I want to buy a permit, I have to buy a permit for this zone, buy a permit for that zone. How are they broken up like this? The birds don't know Route 206 from Route 440 from the White Horse Pike to Route 55. How is this structured?
Yeah, Tom. So it's structured because we wanted to limit how many hunters per square mile, and that's blatantly for our constituents, our sportsmen, to just have enjoyable hunting experience. If we gave everyone a period A permit and just cut them loose, you'd have a turkey hunter parked every 200 yards.
You ain't lying there, Sloan. I've seen that in other states.
And also, it's a safety concern. It's a safety concern. We just want to make the best hunting experience that you can have. And the lottery system really, I mean, if you look at some of these other states, Bob Erickson, shout out to him. He's a turkey genius, and he had to figure it out and handed the platform right off to me.
That was great. Okay, let's get to this hen project. This is pretty fascinating. Go into it, bro. Got a couple of minutes. Make it work. Make it fly.
Yeah. So we joined a multi-state hen research project. We have two study areas, one in the south and one in the north. The south birds, we caught 25 down there. We put backpacks on them. We only had one mortality so far down there, and she was hit by a car. So it wasn't a predator problem or anything like that. She was hit by a car. Up north, I struggled trapping birds. I really did. But I did get my 25.
You did? Okay.
Yep. I got 25 up there. It took me a week in South Jersey. It took me a month and a half in North Jersey.
Were you primarily Sussex, Warren, Passaic, Bergen, that area?
Yeah, Sussex and Warren. Yep. Sussex and Warren is where the 25 birds are right now.
Okay. What's this data going to avail to us?
Well, there's a disease portion of it that's being carried out by UPenn. And then the other stuff that we're really looking for is mean incubation rates, trying to see what nesting success looks like. Like I said, there's a multi-state study, so there's four other states currently in it, and two more look like they're going to be joining on.
Fantastic.
And some of the information we can get out of this is just for years to come. This is one of the largest turkey studies that ever happened in the range.
And where did the idea for this, was it from the lack of birds being found now, number populations dropping, that this whole project came to bear?
Yeah. So Pennsylvania Game Commission is the one who actually started the study. And we jumped on the coattails of it because we're noticing our harvest is just, it's declining since the early 2000s. So we want to know what's going on. What's going on with these birds? I'm a passing a turkey hunter, so I'm invested in it just like everyone else. And it was time to do a little research to see what's going on with these hens.
Okay, Jim. So when is this all going to come to fruition? I mean, when do you get these backpacks back and all that good stuff? Or the date or whatever. How long does it last?
So it's a 3-year study. This is the first year, so it's 3 winters. Our transmitter tags can last about 18 months of battery life, so we should be able to get 2 nesting seasons out of them.
Nice.
And we'll be catching 25 birds in each study area per year. By the end of the study, we'll have 75 birds in each study area with information on.
Jimmy Sloan, great work. We're speaking with Jimmy Sloan. He is the Upland Game Bird Project Leader, DEP's Fish and Wildlife, and a beyond passionate turkey hunter. I think maybe you and Gambale, that might be a draw there.
I think Lou's got me a little bit. He travels a little more than I do.
That's what Lou does. Jimmy, thanks for joining us. Have a great season so far. This spring, this is our next week, the next 4 weeks, it looks like good shots, pun intended.
Absolutely. Good luck, everyone.
The Central and Southlands rule, if you're going to be heading north, me, I like to go up there, tradition, but they are lean. Jimmy said the numbers, the birds are down here. Jimmy, thanks for joining us. Have a great week and have a great season.
All right, you too, Tommy. See you later.
See you, brother. Yeah, turkey season here already between trout. I'm still doing some shad fishing, the striper fishing this time of year. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5. South Jersey's talk station.
Hi, this is Gordon Deal. Coming up on This Weekend, some lawmakers in Washington want to improve the often childish behavior that comes with political debates. Hear what they have in mind. Also, there's a new sweet spot for having a baby. Hear why the age of 35 is gaining popularity. Plus, steps to decompress for National Stress Awareness Month. And will a polluted river be ready for Olympic swimming this summer? That and more coming up on This Weekend.
This morning at 6 on WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Hey, welcome back to our final segment, Rack and Fin Radio, with me, Tom P. Weekend of April 13th and 14th. Jimmy Sloan, turkey time is upon us. Frankie Mahalik with the TOG. Expert Togger, man, get out there. 17 days left on that bite, and it's going to be getting better by the day, providing no more storms like we're having. This is absolutely crazy. What about the stripers? You heard me mention the stripers. Well, hey, the Stripe Bass Bonus Tag application period opened earlier this week, and the actuals are going to come into effect where you can fish from starting May 15th. Joining us on the line right now to go into the bonus tag program for a couple of minutes, very special guest. Oh, man, getting hold of this guy is amazing. I'm so happy. I'm so happy I was able to track him down. Brendan Harrison is with, he is a senior biologist, DEP's Marine Fisheries. Going to talk about the Striped Bass Bonus Tag Program. Brendan, how you doing, man?
Good, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
Striped Bass Bonus Tag! Let's go, man. Explain that program and where it came from and what do we got to do?
Yeah, so we just opened the application period earlier this week. So you can go online to apply. And then, like you said, the season will open May 15th and be open until the end of the year. This program's been going since 1990. Basically, it's our commercial quota that we get allocated from ASMFC, and that's what we use to form the bonus program.
Now, the size limitation is 24 inches to just under 28 inches. Is that a biological reason for that?
When we changed it to that a few years ago, it was just to basically have it differentiate between the normal regulation, which for this year is 28 to 31.
Right.
It just gives people an opportunity to harvest, a slightly smaller fish.
And take a fish home for dinner. Nothing wrong with that. And now here's the thing, listeners, you don't have to catch that 28 to 31 fish first. If you have the tag in your possession, you can catch, correct me if I'm wrong, the 24 to under 28, correct?
Yeah, it's no particular order. So if you have a bonus permit and you catch that fish first, you can, as long as you tag it and then report the harvest, then you can take that fish home.
Okay, so Brennan, so apply for the tag. Go into the process now. They mail it to me. What's the deal? And also, listeners, don't forget the charter and party boats will have these tags. But for the individual angler, what's the situation?
Yeah, so you can go to NJFishandWildlife.com, click on fishing, and then that'll you'll see a link at the bottom that'll take you right to the Striped Bass Bonus Program webpage. And then on there, there's a link to apply. So you basically just fill out your information, and then once we receive your application, which pretty much happens automatically, then we work on sending you a permit in the mail. So you'll just receive an envelope. It'll have your tag, your permit in it, and a fishing log that we ask you to track all your striped bass fishing trips throughout the season, and then like an instruction sheet.
So, Brent, I catch 24 to just under 28. Good. Can I get another tag?
Yeah, so once you harvest the fish, if you report it to us, there's two ways to do that. You can go online and report it. That's the quickest way to get you another permit. Basically, you just fill out your harvest information, and then there's a little checkbox saying, like, I would like an additional permit. And once we receive that, then we'll get you another permit in the mail. Or if you call and report the harvest on our voicemail, it takes a little bit longer, but we'll reach out to you and see if you want an additional permit as well.
Brennan, critical question, the percentage of the quota that the bonus tag, you know, the catch, is it anywhere near what the commercial quota was? Like 5% of it, 10% of it?
So last year we actually used 28% of the quota. So last year we had the highest number of bonus fish harvested in the whole time series. But in general, I don't think in the whole time series we've ever gone over like 36% of the quota. It's always underutilized. So anywhere from, we've had some low years with like 5% of the quota getting used. But like I said, last year we harvested about 28% of it.
I think more people are taking advantage of it, Brennan, because again, chance to bring a fish home to eat.
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing wrong with that. Okay, listen, Striped Bass Bonus Tag application period is now open, and that season, lack of a better term, season will kick in May 15th. Now you can apply all the way up to Halloween, correct? October 31st?
Yep, correct.
Okay, so time for the summer and the fall fish. Brother, thanks for joining us. By the way, how is that little boy doing?
He's doing good, yeah. Thanks a lot.
Boy, I heard him on the phone, and I said, uh-oh, man, they have their hands full.
Yeah, he's getting big quick. It's crazy how fast it goes.
Brent, thanks for joining us. Hey, this is bonus tag program for the Stripers. Take advantage of it. Brent, you take care, man. Thanks for joining us.
All right, thanks a lot, Tom. Have a good one.
And that'll do it for this week on A Rack of Fin Radio with me, Tom P. But wait, one more quick announcement here with a quick shot at a great guest. The Women Veteran and Active Duty Fishing Day that's going to be held on Lake Julian at the Ponderosa Estate Farm still has some space available. Joining us on the line right now, she was out a couple of weeks ago, is Karen No. Karen, tell us about this. It's going to be April 20th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Great place to fish, entertainment, dirty dogs on the menu. Karen, go into it. Tell us about it. Got a couple of minutes. Go.
Yeah, good morning, Tom. And we're doing it in honor of our women veterans suffering from PTSD. Vietnam Veterans Chapter 12, Play Hooky. We're hosting the free day of fishing for our women veterans in active duty. Come out and enjoy the day. Free play hooky from the stress of the battlefield as well as the stress from everyday life. April 20th from 11 to 2 p.m. As you mentioned, it's a lovely Lake Juliana in Millstone Township. Cardinale Enterprises is allowing us to use this facility for a great day of fishing. A lake full of fish. Only requirement we ask is you pre-register so we make sure that we have enough dirty dogs for everyone. We'd love to have beginners, experts, and all those in between. We have loner rods. We have bait lures. We'll have everything you need to enjoy your day of fishing. We're certainly inviting the military spouses as well.
There you go.
Come enjoy the day. Again, it's at Millstone, Lake Juliana, April 20th. All you need to do is register, and you can register at GINOE, N-O-E, GINOE0113@gmail.com. Again, it's GINOE0113@gmail.com.
Listen, it's a great event, and it is free, and it's one of the most beautiful places in the state of New Jersey, if not on the planet. And again, Lona Rods, there's going to be fly fishing instruction, a whole bit. Everything is there. You know, a female veteran or active duty, call. Get involved with this. It's going to be a great event next Saturday, April 20th, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. By the way, young lady, before I let you go, I'll just say it was a big-ass black pickup truck. Rocket launches in the back, rods there, with one of your stickers on the left side. Hey!
Wonderful. Play hooky. We take veterans out, let them get a day on the water, enjoy, get away from the stresses of the battlefield as well as everyday life.
Karen, you take care. Good luck. We'll see you.
All right. Thanks again, Tom.
See
Bye.
You. That'll do it for this week on Rack and Fin Radio. God bless America. God bless our troops. God bless our first responders and law enforcement. A lot of stuff happening. See you next week. Rack and Fin Radio.